Receiving the diagnosis of a brain tumor, you know, that can be overwhelming. But knowing your options, being knowledgeable about treatments, that can be very helpful to perhaps you as a patient and certainly your family as well. Larry Mueller here again. Thanks for joining me today on the Ideas Network. And thanks to Dr. John Kuo as well for joining us today. He's an assistant professor of neurology, neurological surgery and human oncology at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. He directs the Comprehensive Brain Tumor Program at the UW Hospital and Clinics, as well as co-director of the UW Comprehensive Cancer Center Multidisciplinary Brain Tumor Clinic. You may have some questions about brain tumors, maybe some experiences to share. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Just look for the Larry Mueller Show. And Dr. Kuo, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Thank you very much, Larry. It's a pleasure to be here.
Tell us about the Comprehensive Brain Tumor Program at UW Health.
Well, we're a big team of physicians from multiple specialties, neurosurgery, neurology, oncology, radiation oncology, and even involving specialists in neuroradiology, the imaging of the brain, as well as the pathologists, neuropathologists, and even ophthalmologists who specialize in neuro-ophthalmology. And it's all together with specialized nursing and inpatient as well as outpatient teams to help take care of all of the different needs of patients. You can imagine having a brain tumor diagnosis is very scary. It can affect the thinking, the cognitive, as well as physical abilities of patients and really put a burden on families.
Yeah, and so thinking about the broad range of people involved here, which I think is great, the kinds of treatments you can provide must be fairly substantial.
Well, you know, we always want the treatments to get even better. And first of all, going backwards a little bit to think about it, brain tumor is a pretty broad diagnosis. It actually includes many, many different types of diseases. The broad category of cancers that spread to the brain, from lung cancer, breast cancer, skin cancer, and that's more frequently found. But then there are the primary tumors of the brain that grow from brain and spinal cord tissue. And these could be benign, very slow growing, but they could involve pituitary gland. They could involve pushing in on the brain and causing pressure problems and changes, as well as all the way to the other end of the spectrum, cancers of the brain itself. So you can imagine, broadly, surgery is going to be important for establishing a diagnosis and taking away pressure or taking away mass effect. And then followed by that, either specialized chemotherapy that are all being developed now or radiation oncology for treatments. These are still very blunt instruments.
Yeah, very, very blunt instruments. How many patients do you treat in a year?
Well, there's about 20,000 primary brain cancers, but eight times that number of people with cancers that spread to the brain. And then we are dealing with also a lot of patients with benign tumors and helping them manage these diseases as they come forward.
You know, as we were talking about Alzheimer's and the imaging and so forth that goes on in Alzheimer's, I expect some of that plays a role in detecting brain tumors as well.
Absolutely. And that's where UW-Madison and other places like this have terrific research and physicists and radiologists, and you know, the special sophisticated MRI scans can be supplemented with many different sequences. Even now, for example, we're one of the uncommon centers that have an intraoperative MRI, so we can actually get special sophisticated visualization of the anatomy during the time of surgery.
Oh boy. Are there usually symptoms for brain tumors?
I think that a lot of the symptoms would relate to mass effect. They could also cause irritation and cause seizures or blackout episodes. So even something as general as a headache, not that there are many headaches out there related to brain tumors, but some can be related to brain tumors. And then when you're talking about even very small, half an inch or even quarter inch small tumors, while they're benign in the pituitary, they could cause a lot of hormonal problems that could lead to lack of menstruation, infertility, even just energy level differences.
They are brain tumors are difficult to treat, are they not?
Well, thankfully, as I mentioned, some are benign and you have time to make the diagnosis and to make the treatment. And others are still incurable, such as primary brain cancer or glioblastoma. So we're doing a lot of research in the laboratory. We're focusing right now, for example, on cancer stem cell biology in my laboratory, cancer stem cells being seeds of a cancer that can grow into the whole cancer. And probably these are the source of recurrence and the cells that escape current treatments.
Dr. John Kuo, our guest today, assistant professor in the Department of Neurological Surgery and Human Oncology at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. So it's great to have him along. If you have questions as we go along today, I hope you'll join us. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Maybe some experiences to share. We'd love to hear about those as well. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or go ahead and post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You were talking about the fact that some of these tumors are benign. How do you know, or how is it determined if a tumor is benign or cancerous?
The most definitive thing to do is to have some tissue with a biopsy, and the pathologist helps us with special tests to determine that. But a lot of experience has come about with the advanced imaging of MRIs, where we see, for example, in usually older folks, enhancing lesions around the coverings of the brain. And these are quite characteristic of meningiomas, which are very prevalent and may be found in many people who are asymptomatic even when MRIs are done.
You know, thinking about it, if somebody said, well, you've got your choice between a benign tumor or one that's cancerous, I'm going to take the benign one. I don't want either one. But can a benign tumor be as dangerous in some ways as a cancerous one?
Absolutely, because you can imagine a skull is a fixed volume and you only have space for the brain in there. So a benign tumor, even something like a meningioma, growing very slowly over years or even a decade, can get to the size where it's pushing on the brain enough, and it's of a large enough size that you now have weakness or even irritation of brain causing seizures.
Sure. So,
just like any other tumors or cancers, earlier detection is going to be always better.
And are the treatments done are probably different depending on if a tumor is benign or not?
Well, the tumor histology or pathology will dictate the treatment, but usually that's going to involve some sort of surgery to establish the diagnosis, and then following that, whether it's observation with MRI scans in a serial fashion or radiation or particular chemotherapies. And even now, more and more research is being done to discover the therapies that tag specifically the molecular biology of the tumors.
Well, let's take some questions. Michael in Madison, we'll give you a chance. Thank you for calling. Hello.
Sure. Hi. I had an acoustic neuroma in 1967. It was totally removed. That's a benign tumor. I'd like to know, first of all, which is more common, a benign tumor or a cancerous tumor, and what about the comparable recidivism rates for benign versus cancerous tumors?
Yeah, good questions, too.
It's good to hear from you, and I'm glad to hear that you're doing well after such a long interval. Your type of tumor, the acoustic, is a tumor that's benign, growing from the nerves for hearing. Mm-hmm. And complete surgical resection is the best way to go, and it sounds like you've had great success with that. In general, we also have the option of doing some touch-up radiation for those folks who have an acoustic tumor, even though it's benign, that may still be left over after maximal surgery. And also for some people who get this tumor picked up on by imaging early, radiation is also another option to control it long-term.
Mm. What about coming back, though? I mean, you know, here's Michael, apparently hasn't come back in all these years, but is it what's the rate of, or is it less likely, you know, once you get rid of it, that it's going to come, you're not going to get it back again?
For the benign tumors, it's less likely to come back, or it takes much longer to come back because they grow very slowly. For the primary brain cancers like glioblastoma or astrocytoma, they're incurable because they keep coming back.
Oh.
So we need new ways of treating these and new ways to understand the biology of these cancers.
Michael, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Jane in Kewaunee County, your turn. Hi, Jane.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering, in the research that you're doing for glioblastoma and other brain cancers, have you looked at the relationship with Agent Orange and or the Vietnam, Thailand, Military Zone of Korea veterans? I work with veterans a lot, and unfortunately, I've seen quite a few glioblastomas in the last few years.
Oh.
That's a really good question in terms of environmental influences on uncommon tumors like glioblastoma. I have to say that while I personally in my laboratory haven't looked at that, we have a lot of experts in the field who are looking into different influences. I don't think that we know exactly what causes glioblastoma. It's such an uncommon tumor to begin with. But previous radiation exposure have been associated, certain environmental influences. Nothing's been definitive. For example, I'm always telling my medical school, medical students when I talk to them, that it's still an unclear question of whether cell phones cause brain tumors, especially acoustic tumors.
We'll take that up right after this look at the news. Thank you for calling. Taking a look, a close look at brain tumors and brain cancer today. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. My guest, Dr. John Kuo, who is a professor of neurological surgery and human oncology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. He directs the Comprehensive Brain Tumor Program at UW Hospitals and Clinics. It's great to have him come by again. He stops by every once in a while to talk with us. You may have a family member who's had to deal with a brain tumor. I have questions about the diagnosis. Love to hear from you. And your experiences as well at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. I want to give Sharon in Milwaukee a chance to join us. Sharon, thank you for waiting.
You bet. Good morning.
Good morning. What can we do for you?
Well, for the sake of privacy, I have to do this on a hypothetical. A brain tumor or a lump that looks like a tumor showed up on the pictures they take of babies in utero, and the doctors have decided that it is a tumor. Is there any kind of action that can be taken before the child is born?
This has got to be a very rare situation. Sharon, thank you so much for calling. Dr. Kuo?
Thank you for calling, Sharon. This is sounding very rare, and I hope that if it is certainly something you or your family or your friends are dealing with, they're getting the best medical advice possible. I don't really have much information to talk about because brain tumors in general are very rare to begin with, but you do touch on something that's important, and this is a frontier area. What conditions can we treat, whether it's extra fluid on the brain or lesions that need to be diagnosed in utero? And I know a lot of very smart pediatric surgeons are working on this. In terms of whether it's a tumor or not, like any other cancer or tumor diagnosis, the key is to get a diagnosis and get tissue first, and then that will guide exactly what kind of current treatments as well as potential experimental trials can be done.
So, is it possible to get a tissue sample in utero?
I'll defer this to my pediatric surgical colleagues, but there's a lot being done on the frontiers of doing in utero procedures.
Okay.
And that's really all I know about that right now.
Okay. All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sharon, for calling. Brian in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Brian. Thanks for calling.
Oh, okay. Okay, I'm glad to be on. Last year, I was diagnosed with a acoustic neuroma tumor. I think it's between the ear and the brain. I had a hearing test, and then through that, I had to get a MRI, and then they said, yep, you have a tumor. And then I went to two neurosurgeons, and they both said, yeah, you need to have surgery. And it's a long surgery, 8 to 10 hours. And then I was ready to do it. And then I went online and I did some research and I discovered, and through, there's a support network of people that I talked to. And I found out that you can do radiation with a CyberKnife or a Gamma Knife. And I went that route, and it's 95% the size of the tumor I have. The Dr. Chang from Stanford said that my chances are 95% that it'll stop the tumor from growing, and 50-50 chance that I'll not lose my hearing in that ear. So I just wanted to share that, because I wouldn't have known that if it wasn't for the Internet.
Yeah. All right.
It sounds like you got great advice after you started looking around and getting more information, and I think that that's a great thing. As you implied, you know, acoustics and other tumors are somewhat rare when they're primary tumors of the brain, and sometimes there's some controversy depending on exactly what your expertise is, what the options are. There are terrific patients and family support networks, and that's something that I want to also give a plug in to our workshop.
Yeah.
May 6th, it's a half-day workshop at the UW Health at the Health Sciences Learning Center, and it's free. It's entitled Navigating Brain Tumor Care, where you will get a chance to hear a bit about normal anatomy and functions of the brain, as well as new advances in care treatment. And as I mentioned at the outset, brain tumors of all sorts really can have a toll on patients' family, the patients themselves in terms of their cognitive and physical abilities, and there's a lot of things that we can do to help with the caregivers and the patients navigate exactly through this complicated care process, as well as activities of daily life.
Oh, and so give me the
this is May 6th this year, at the Health Sciences Learning Center, and certainly you can get more information by going on the UW Health website or uwhealth.org/braintumorcare.
There we go. Thank you so much for calling, Brian. It gave us a good opportunity to talk about that event. You know, Beth, a friend of mine shot me a note about a fundraiser that's coming up. This is a little bit further down the road, but it's to support Dr. Kuo's lab. It's called Gray Matters Music, something like that?
That's right. That's right. It's a terrific event with music and laughter and families getting together. And Beverly Semin and her family have been instrumental in helping support our laboratory work on cancer stem cell biology. And also, for example, Lois Loft and her family with Farming Against Brain Cancer in memory of Roger. And then Sarah Balzer with her dad, Stephen Balzer, mm-hmm. who is very well known at the Our Lady Queen of Peace School, since they are very much with regular events called Jogging for Noggin involved in helping support us. And as we all know also, and I know I can talk about this, Coach Gard and his family have been really quite big supporters of our research, because they, from personal experience, and many others that I can't name, of course, have been touched by this disease in all different forms.
Yeah, it's wonderful, all those of us. And just to follow through, this is not the Gray Matters Music is not until August 13th, but it's a Sunday, and it sounds like a lot of fun.
It absolutely is.
Yeah. Well, Jim in Cleveland has something for us. Let's go there. Jim, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. It was this past summer, right around Memorial Day weekend, that I was diagnosed with a tumor on the brain.
Okay.
And then they did a biopsy and said that the tumor was malignant. And so then I began different kinds of treatments, and I'm wondering, do the treatments have different goals to try and achieve and control the either the growth of cancer or the growth of the tumor? I first started out in the summer receiving rice chemotherapy treatments, and then I had radiation and the CyberKnife, and then they decided that the tumor was still there. It was a 5 centimeter in size, but and that it wasn't smaller. So they did another round of rice chemotherapy and then did the CyberKnife again, and then eventually went through a stem cell transplant process, which was completed in February. And I am wondering, is one kind of treatment to attack the tumor, and the other kind of the stem cell, is that to prevent new cancer growth?
Mm-hmm.
Do these different treatments have different purposes?
Yeah, good question, too.
Well, it sounds like you've been through quite a lot and had a very complicated course and a lot of good opinions and management. So congratulations and kudos to your team. Not knowing your particular history, I want to sort of talk more generally.
Sure.
A lot of malignant or aggressive brain cancers have to be treated according to their diagnosis and the biology. Even now, we're learning the incurable glioblastoma has many different genetics to it, and potentially could be targeted with different things. In general, the surgery is to take away the mass effect if possible and to get tissue for the special molecular biology testing. Radiation has the ability to stop cells from growing, but obviously could have potential side effects. And then with the biology, for example, targeting specific receptors or with the blunt instrument of chemotherapy, targeting any excess dividing cells, because aggressive cancer usually divides much more than normal brain tissue, one is trying to stop the growth. But we know with, for example, glioblastoma, the primary brain cancer, which is incurable, we need to have new approaches. And at the break, Larry and I were just talking about the news that the final results for a pivotal clinical trial on something that many people didn't think would work has just been released last week. And these are the alternating electrical fields or tumor treating fields for glioblastoma. And by no means is it a cure. But with the advances 10 years ago of starting a special chemotherapy called Temodar, along with radiation after maximal surgery for glioblastoma patients, when you add on this alternating electrical field, one can actually have long-term survivors now when there weren't very many before.
And what does that kind of involve, that process?
Well, we're one of the few centers that actually can do this. And after surgery and the chemotherapy and radiation, along with the chemotherapy being given in monthly cycles after that, one has to wear pads on your scalp, mm-hmm. connected to a battery pack that's light, but you have to carry for as long as possible, usually at least 18 hours a day. And these alternating electrical fields work on the principle that it disrupts the chromosomes of dividing cells, which are going to be the cancer cells. But you have to shape the beams and prescribe it appropriately. And we're one of the first and the only centers in the area that can do this along with the company. And the other side of it is, like any other cancer treatment, they take a lot of money to develop and to get through clinical trials, and they're very expensive. But not to forget that a lot of times these companies, including the one for the alternating electrical fields, are willing to cover this treatment for patients who can't pay it or the insurance won't pay it. So please don't forget to ask about that, and certainly we're very happy to help put people on the right track for the appropriate treatments.
Oh, that's wonderful. Jim, thank you so much for calling. Richard in Waniwak, we'll turn to you next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My question is about family history and genetics. My mother-in-law passed away from glioblastoma in 2003. She was in her early to mid-40s. My big question is, are my wife and my two young girls at higher risk for developing brain tumors or glioblastoma specifically in their future? And if so, is there anything that we can do to prevent that?
Those are all really good questions. So let me take the idea of genetics having a role or not in brain tumors. It is known in rare, even benign tumors, such as with multiple meningiomas or even pituitary tumors, because it's associated with other hormonal glands like the thyroid, the adrenals, or even acoustic tumors, for example, association with neurofibromatosis, a rare genetic condition, that it could, even benign tumors, run in families. And if you've heard of some of these terms or your family knows of some of these,
yeah,
and there are multiple people with that disorder, that you should mention it to your doctor. On the other side, what you're asking specifically about GBM is not known. Glioblastoma is not known to running families per se. And I think that keeping an open mind about it is important, because we don't know all of the biology behind glioblastoma at this time, even though a lot of progress has been made. If there's any questions for your family, and if there's any further issues that come up, I would strongly encourage you to talk to your primary doctor and start from there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
As I was listening to your comments, Dr. Kuo, I was thinking about, you know, if you have a family history, all right, we may assume genetics, but could there possibly be some environmental factor that...
Thank you for bringing that up, Larry. Absolutely, yes, because sometimes we hear of clusters of neighborhoods or workplace that may relate to cancers, that is, whether it's brain cancer or others, mm-hmm. that happen in a location. And that could certainly be important. But again, for glioblastoma, given that it is uncommon compared to many other cancers,
yeah,
we still don't have particular information about that.
Richard, thank you again. I want to go to Greg in Turtle Lake. Greg, thank you for calling.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. My niece was diagnosed with the blastoma brain cancer about 2 years ago, and she was given, at that time, about 6 months to live. And anyway, to make a long story short, she's still alive and doing quite well. She was in hospice for about 6 months, and she got out of there about a month ago. But what I'm getting to is, when there was no hope left, her brother started giving her, I think it's called THC oil. It's from the marijuana plant, I guess.
Yeah.
And everybody's pretty convinced that that's what, it shrunk the tumor. I'm sure the doctors know she's getting this, because they could easily tell with a blood test what's in her blood. But he's been giving it to her on her brother's been giving her this THC oil on a regular basis, and the tumor has shrunk, and she's doing quite well. She's even in physical therapy now, learning how to walk again, because she lost the use on the one side of her body.
Wow.
And I'm wondering if this, you know, I'm not into homeopathic stuff myself, but I've seen this now work on her. I'm wondering if this should be investigated a little more, or why it's not being investigated.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a very interesting story. Dr. Kuo?
That is a very interesting story, and I'm really glad you bring that up. There is actually a clinical trial where we're registering patients who are extraordinary responders, and this is through the National Institutes of Health. And for rare diseases such as brain cancer, and not knowing the specifics of your family member, I can't comment, but we, along with many other people at the NIH are interested in registering and finding out why there are extraordinary responders and what we can be doing and learning from those extraordinary responders.
So, sounds like she is an extraordinary responder.
According to what you're telling us, yes, yeah. It sounds like that.
Yeah, well, very interesting. Greg, thank you so much for calling. Would an extraordinary, just to follow up on that, would if someone is in that kind of situation, I'm sure they would catch the attention of researchers, those individuals.
Absolutely, and that's why when that initiative came out from the National Institute of Health, we searched through our clinics and our patient population to try to offer and enroll these people in that trial, which is not to receive treatment, but to have their records available to the NIH and to all of the researchers around the country in order to be able to collect these stories and understand exactly what might have helped these people. Because sometimes it's not necessarily only the treatments that were given, but the clinical course as well as their particular tumor types. As I mentioned, we may say glioblastoma, but there are many types. For example, we worked on a special ion channel. This was just reported last year. And it's expressed only in a subset of the glioblastomas, about 30 to 40%. But those patients, in a retrospective fashion, who receive medication that inadvertently also targeted that ion channel, had benefit.
Oh.
And so now it's driving forward prospective studies, potentially, both in the laboratory as maybe even super selective clinical trials to be done that we can conceive of to try to see if we can help those particular types of patients with those particular tumors' biology.
Oh, very interesting. Well, I want to go back before we're out of time here. The brain tumor care workshop that's coming up, again, give us the background or give us the information on that.
Sure. It is being held Saturday, May 6th, and it's half a day, and it's entitled Navigating Brain Tumor Care. And we'll have physicians, nurses, social workers, and researchers present. And there'll be small sessions about understanding anatomy, learning about new advances in the care of benign and malignant brain tumors, as well as question and answer panels. And this will have topics focused not just on patients and tumors, but also on the quality of life issues and their caregiver issues that are very important for families.
How do people have to sign up for this? Or
yes, just for food purposes, we really like to have a count. And it's at the website uwhealth.org/braintumorcare.
Okay, so fairly straightforward. uwhealth.org/braintumorcare.
Yes.
You can sign up. Are there any costs associated?
Nope, this is free.
So completely free opportunity here. And again, the date is May
6th.
And Jill, do we have that posted up on our Facebook page? she says, maybe I don't, but I'll put it up right away. So she'll have it on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody today. There were always a lot of questions. Dr. Kuo, you'll come back and be with us again, I hope.
Definitely, Larry. You'll be doing the show into the next century, right?
Well, I don't know about that, but I'll give it a shot. I'll give it a shot. Dr. John Kuo, who is a professor, full professor in July, as a matter of fact, coming up in the Neurological Surgery and Human Oncology Department at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Great to have him with us. Thank you so much for listening in. And, boy, we've got a show coming up on a whole different topic, rain gardens, tomorrow. So in the meantime, stay with us.